This podcast may contain content that is not suitable for listeners under the age of 18. If you are 17 or younger and wish to educate yourself about sex and relationships, you should visit scarleteen.com. That's scarleteen with one T.
Hey, I'm Alicia, your non-monogamous relationship coach. Welcome to the podcast where my friends and I chat about our relationships, enthusiastic non-monogamy, polyamory, swinging, kink, and our lives. You'll get a candid peek into what makes it worth it to live life outside the box. And in case you're still wondering, nope, we're not monogamous. Hello, hello, hello. Today, Lee Harrington's joining me. Lee's an internationally known author and educator whose new book, Become Your Own Beloved, A Guide to Delighting in Self-Connection, was just released. This book has invaluable practices like how to examine the labels placed on you, how to forgive yourself for any regrets or missteps, exercises to help you learn to celebrate yourself as a whole being, and have more fulfilling relationships with others, find support and community. But we also talked about how Lee's figured all this out and their own relationship challenges, right? We talked about the importance of reassessing your beliefs and your preferences and how it applies to relationships with yourself and others, romantic and otherwise. And Lee emphasized the importance of being gentle with yourself and practicing self-love and self-relationship, which is just not something that comes naturally for most of us and that most of us have been taught how to do. Most of our parents haven't set good examples of that. So this is just really, really lovely. He brings a combination of playful engagement and thoughtful dialogue that anybody could understand. He's taught classes and shared presentations and delivered keynotes worldwide. So I am honored and delighted to have him on the show. I really hope you enjoy this conversation as much as I did. And if so, leave us a review. That would mean the world to me. When you leave reviews, it tells other people they should also listen. And then that spreads the ideas and concepts of non-monogamy so that it's not something that just us weirdos are doing, right? Do your part in making it a little more well-known. Enjoy the show.
Recording is in progress. Okay, cool. Hi, again. I am really excited that you're here. I think it was Delphine that said, "Hey, you should check this out and be on Alicia's podcast." Yep. She was on a few months ago. So that was cool. I'm so happy you're here. Thank you for coming on.
It is such a delight. I'm surprised in all of the years I've been doing this stuff that we haven't had a chance to cross over. But that's the beauty of the internet and the world that we're in, right? That people from across the globe go, wait, you're doing similar stuff to me? That's so exciting. So I'm glad to get to be here as well.
Totally, totally. That's amazing. excuse me. Okay. I, first and foremost, would love to hear, we're going to talk about your book, but first I would love to know about your relationship style. How do you identify? What's your relationship philosophy?
Yeah, it has ebbed and flowed so much over the past 30 years. And I would say that right now I am consensually non-monogamous and have a deep web of friends around the world, some of whom occasionally are play partners or lovers, but that is not the focus. The focus is love and affection and attention and connection. And beyond that, the rest of it fills itself in.
Beautiful. I love that so much. That's so good. So good.
Yeah, I'm very blessed to have an amazing partner who lives in the same town as me. We actually just had our 2-year anniversary, and that's where I'd say the bulk of my time and focus in relationship and partnership goes. But for me, having this collection of humans everywhere from my mother's best friend to a play partner I've had for 20 years on and off to people that I know and get to see at conferences from time to time, I would not be the same person without all of them in my world in some way, shape, or form, even if some of them are what I call Tupperware relationships, which for those of you who were around and watched television back in the 80s and 90s might know what I'm talking about, where you go, still fresh, right? You open them back up. You haven't seen a friend in 5 years and suddenly, So I think for me, it's that web, that connection.
Oh, I love that so much. I think that that is one of the things that's really missing culturally, like as a whole, is this like deep community, right? And having people that you can relate to without having to put up these big walls and barriers and boundaries of like, you're not in my romantic relationship, so I cannot give you my emotional energy.
Right. And to have, for me, to have that be multi-generational, to have that be, whether that's social generations, remembering the people we cared about in high school.
Yeah.
Right. Being able to have the generations of our own lifetime, as well as even though my mother has passed, being able to reach out to Katie and Shirley and her dear web and still say, you matter, or to be able to turn to my father's brother's children, who are technically my cousins, but are literally 30 years difference than me, because I'm the child of the oldest, they're the children of the youngest, and get to be either peers or connections with them, that I think you said it really well, that just because you're romantic doesn't mean you should not be able to have access to intimacy. And for me, that idea, why are we creating lines between biological family as compared to family of the heart? And to remember all of these as we're doing this stuff.
That's so good. It makes me think, you know, I work with a lot of, especially couples that are like opening up, or people who are just like starting to explore what else they can do besides monogamy. And so many of the challenges that they bump up against are like, this, like the levels of intimacy that you're kind of like allowed to have or not allowed to have, right? Like what, like the hierarchy that just, even if you're not in a couple, there's still like this hierarchy of like emotional involvement that you can have with.
Right. People. Yeah. And I mean, even the mythology of this is my best friend and you're only allowed one.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. And I mean, I just gave an example. Katie and Shirley were my mom's two best friends.
Yeah.
And the three of them often went out for, you know, Mexican food every single month. And because there was a place that my mother loved the margaritas, like all of that kind of stuff, right? That there was a mythology that you have to have a best friend, but what's it like to have two? Yeah. Or if you're dating someone and have a best friend and have that coworker that you love spending time with, do we have to put them in a hierarchy? Do we have to say this one is better than that one? And then we add our relationship with ourselves. And it's like, wait, where do I get to prioritize me in any of this web, or my children, or my, you know, where is this story coming from? And unfortunately, a lot of the story is coming from toxic capitalism and how it manifested in the US in the 40s and 50s. But even if we look at it today, I think for me, having the courage to pause on occasion and say, oh, this is what I'm doing. This is what's happening right now. I'm perpetuating a story that's actually not really my beliefs, right? I'm perpetuating a story that says, oh, I have to have my romantic partner be what I focus on 100% of the time, as compared to my partner and I sitting down and being like, actually, both of us need to not see each other 2 to 3 nights a week, even if we live in the same house. We need time to have time with our friends, with our spiritual practice, right? To pause and be able to go to wherever it is we're doing that work without it being a story that I am not caring about them. That story doesn't have to be present, but God, that story is so easy. that story is so easy to fall into growing up in the U.S. It really is.
Yeah. Yeah. Holy cow. It's almost like codependency is just like really celebrated and baked in.
Right.
Just baked into everything. Like you have to do everything together. And if you want time apart, if you want to be your own individual autonomous person for a moment, even, then there must be something wrong.
We'll be right back.
Hey, it's Alicia here. You know, the voice you've been tuning into episode after episode. Today, I'm popping in with an invitation that's really close to my heart. Behind the scenes, I've been crafting something special just for you, my dedicated listeners. If there's a voice inside you that's seeking guidance on navigating the realms of relationships and non-monogamy, wanting to like boost your confidence and find that unwavering sense of security, or you're struggling to manage the tricky waters of jealousy, I'm here to offer my support. I've cleared my schedule to open up 50 slots this month for free one-on-one clarity chats directly with me. So this is your opportunity to dive deep into those pressing questions and come out on the other side with newfound clarity and direction. The availability on this is super limited and these spots are going to fill up really fast. So don't miss your chance to connect with me. Head over to my website, aliciapayne.com, right now. Go secure your spot because together we can uncover a path to a more joyful, fulfilling, and easy non-monogamous journey. Talk to you soon.
I think there's this extra piece with the notion of codependency of is it conscious? Because if I choose conscious interdependence, right? I say I want to enmesh 40% of myself with this person, or I do want to, like, we've sat down, the three of us or two of us or seven of us, I don't know, whatever your structure is, but I've sat down and decided, and the group of us have sat down and decided, we do want to do everything together. We are that kind of collective consciousness. But that's different than tripping and falling into it. I think that's different than doing it because you think that's the only way to do it, or because that's what you saw in front of the scene your parents do.
Yeah.
But most children never saw what was happening behind the scenes.
No.
And so I think, because I sometimes see people who are polyamorous or consciously non-monogamous or any of these various structures, I see some folks almost start proselytizing, saying, oh, you have to leave all of these things. You can't, you have to do everything on, you know, on your own, which perpetuates in turn the story that the collective known as the two of us or the three of us or our entire community of friends and family, that those don't matter, right? You have to be a separate entity. Yeah. And I think there's been a loss that comes from that extreme as well. So I think for myself, at least, pausing and going, am I being conscious in this choice, or have I tripped and fallen into it, has been a really key part of my personal exploration around these topics.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes. It's the intentionality. It's like we swing from one extreme to the other, trying to find the right way to be. And that's like, you know, this like hyper independence is really lonely and has a lot of negatives to it. This hyper codependence is has no independence and has a lot of negatives to it. So it's like finding and really intentionally creating what it is that you want in all the places.
And what would it be like if we as a collective community, whatever that looks like, could be your family unit, could be all of the people that you play rugby with, I don't know, your collective unit that you're part of. What would it be like if we not only celebrated our collective sense of self, but also celebrated each of the parts in turn? I think of it as my body, right? If I look at my body as somebody who lives with complex disabilities and whatnot, like I can celebrate that all of me is working, and I can be really grateful that my hip is in socket right now, right? I can have both of these celebrations. I could be really delighted by how beautiful my eyes are when I look in a mirror, but I can also be delighted at the entirety of me. And I think for myself, I mean, I don't know for you, like, what is that like for you with the notion of swinging back and forth from celebration of self and celebration of the individual or the collective? Like, what is that like for you?
Gosh, that's a really good question. It does feel like a pendulum swing. It does feel like always trying to find the sweet spot, right? Like sometimes I just want to be a part of. I just want to be held and loved. And like, you know, I want to be able to fall apart with someone. And sometimes I just want to be a free bird and go and do my thing and not have to worry about anybody else. Right. And so it's like constantly trying to find that sweet spot of like, are my needs being met? Are my partner's needs being met? Are my children being cared for? Is my business running? You know, do I need a break? Do I need to be more involved?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh. That's so good.
Yeah. And fine. Oh, go ahead. Yeah. Right. And I think shows like this podcast, but also our own personal reflections and conversations and all that, I think create the tools for being able to assess the questions you just brought up.
Yeah.
Right. Am I in balance with this? Am I in alignment with this? How am I with all of these pieces?
Yeah.
I think continuing to find tools and then not just find them, but use them.
Use them. I read the book and then I put it back on the shelf.
You nailed it. That's exactly the picture that I had in my head.
Yep.
Because you read it doesn't mean you did it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so hard sometimes. It's like, okay, I know what I'm supposed to do, but when I'm like, you know, when people are like in their feels, activated, triggered, just not in a calm state, it's really hard to go and use those tools that aren't mm-hmm. the thing you've been doing for years.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And when you talk about doing the things you've done for years, I sometimes have this curiosity around, can we modify the tools we already have that we already know how to default to? Can we use them in this new environment we're exploring? Do we have to, you know, toss it out the window, mm-hmm. as it were? Which, tossing it out the window, I always love the fact that like some of that metaphor comes from literally throwing your bedpan full of toilet waste out the window in like classical England. I'm like, yeah. Do we have to throw all the shit out and have it land on the people down below on the street? What would it be like to modify some of these things, right? Like if we know how to take someone on a date, what would it be like to take ourselves out on a date? If we know how to be able to do some journaling about what's been happening at school or do self-reflection in those ways, what would it be like to do tandem self-reflection with, you know, everybody in your polycule and then everybody read each other's stuff or do debriefing after you've done journaling about your relationship polycule, right? Like if you have a tool, what would it be like to be more expansive around the thing you already have instead of feeling like you have to start from nowhere every time you are trying to learn a new relationship structure or skill?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I love that. I there's so much there that it is like, there's so much that we kind of have feel like we have to unlearn. But mm-hmm. what if you are learning it, learning how to shift it and learning how to change it?
Yeah, like it's a next chapter rather than having to start a whole new book.
Mm-hmm. I love that. Earlier you had talked about, earlier you said you were talking about like your body and like noticing that your eyes are beautiful and then the whole of your body. And I loved that so much, talking about the self-love piece of relationship, right? And I think that's what you talk about quite a bit in your book that's coming out.
Well, self-love, yes, but self-relationship.
Mm.
I've been really thinking just in life a lot, especially in the structures of polyamory and consensual non-monogamy, about the notion that love is not always enough. That it's about how do we structure relationship? How do we thrive in this? And 12, 13 years ago, I was on an arts performance tour thing with Catherine Valenti and S.J. Tucker and some other authors and whatnot. I was writing at the time only about kinky stuff. They're like writing young adult fantasy novels. So it was an amusing combo. But I was on this tour and I had a conversation with an amazing person named Rose. And they had gotten married to themselves. And I'm like, that's such an interesting concept. I need to really sit with that. And I started sitting with that and I'm like, that's a great idea. And even got myself an engagement ring. Like, what would it be like to propose to myself? Like this whole model that Rose was talking about. And then I got myself a ring and I realized I had a shitty relationship with me. Right? Like if I proposed to me, I might say no. How's that for an existential crisis? And it was this moment that I froze and went, wow, I have people in my life that I love and cherish and even want to be with the rest of my life, but do I have it set up with health and structures that can actually do this thing? Because I am with me, death do us part. Like literally, I was there when I was born, right? And I'm going to be there when I die. Like that's going to happen. But my relationship with me wasn't healthy. And there's been times where it hasn't been. And at that point, I'd been poly for 15 plus years. I didn't have poly. The word is poly at the very beginning. But I'd been in these sorts of different structures for years. And I had this similar realization while I was having this like aha moment with myself over the next couple of years. I realized that I was, when hitting into moments with people that I loved, that it wasn't a good fit. There wasn't anything beyond the love to fall back onto in the relationship. And so in doing some of this self-work around the idea of self-relationship and self-love, it let me look at multi-partnered love and multi-partnered relationship. Are the relationships set up for the days that love is not enough? And am I set up internally for me for the days that relationship needs to be there? Because there's days, I don't know about you, but there's days I don't like me. I'm like, God, Lee, you're being a bit of a insert explicative here. Right?
What are you doing?
What are you doing?
This was
one of my favorite sentences to me is, you know better than this.
Yes.
You've had that too?
Uh-huh. I've written that down several times.
Oh my God. Especially for folks like, you know, you and me who do coaching work, that moment where the thing comes out of your mouth and you're like, oh shoot, I guess I need to look at that one.
Ooh. Can I take my own advice here?
Right. Doctor, heal thyself. Doctor, heal thyself. Yeah. And so one of the things I wanted to look at with Become Your Own Beloved was this, you know, which is the name of the book, is to really start looking at what's it like to become your own pen pal? What's it like to go on a date with you? What's it like to play those questions of like, learn a whole bunch of stuff about you that you would ask with a partner you're on date four with. Like, what would it be like to do that for me or for you? And then through it, like one of the hardest chapters to write, oh my God, like I put this book on the shelf for like a year, literally, was forgiving your abusive partner. Mm. When you do things to you or set up your life, or whether it's the big things or the little things, what's it like to learn the skills of forgiving you? But unlove, like a lot of the other self-love books I was seeing out there, that were doing the pendulum you were talking about.
Yeah.
That say like, well, you've got to work on your relationships or work on you, down to like the notion that you have to get a divorce to be able to work, do self-love work. What's it like to do it while you're in relationship, whether it's relationship with community or with individuals? And this is where I cheat. Those of you who are poly or consensually non-monogamous, when you read it, you're going to be like, oh my God, my friends get to learn poly 101. In the book, I break down for the do it while you're in relationship. I argue that when you're with you, and yeah, they're with them, there's three relationships: relationship A, relationship B, and relationship AB.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
If there's three people, so the two of you and your kid, there's relationship A, B, C, A, B, B, C, A, C, A, B, C. That's called poly 101. I just stripped off the label and shoved it in a book that's mostly being marketed to mono folks. But it's skill sets I learned here.
Which is what people need to know.
Yes. Yes, that's exactly it. Everybody needs to be listening to your podcast, because the tools that are being discussed here are not just for CNM folks.
Yes. Yes. My assistant is monogamous, and she's like, I learn so much from all of the content you're putting out, from your podcast. She's like, my husband and I, our relationship is fucking amazing because of all of this non-monogamous advice.
Right. And the stuff you're doing, but there's a mythology that says the stuff that's on this show should only be for folks who are poly or whatever terms they're using.
Yeah.
When it's not real.
Yeah.
These things can be translated, right? Mm-hmm. They can be put into a framework that's accessible to others, but sometimes the words we use make it intimidating. Mm-hmm. So for me, stripping all the poly words out of it and shoving it in that chapter with stuff that doesn't exclude people, because what I could have said, and I think it's what I said in my original notes, was polyamory shit applies to you too. Pretend you're one of the partners in your polycule, smiley face. I think that's what the note was.
It's always fun how the notes, with a rough draft, right?
For the rough draft.
and then what we come up with at the end.
Right. And all of your, like a bulk of your listeners would have been like, oh, right, that's cool. I needed to hear that. But for everyone else, it was 7 or 8 pages of writing and then an exercise for doing the work for yourself that's short, that's easy, so you can actually practice it. Because they don't have, you know, other people who haven't been doing this work might not understand that single sentence. So let's open it up. Let's include a story or two. Let's make it more accessible. And my hope for the poly folks is that maybe you'd be able to take that chapter and also be like, dear mom, try this. When you're done with those, you know, 10 pages, get back to me. You now have language to talk about my relationship with me and my two girlfriends.
Yes.
Because now they have the words that translate outside of this community.
Yeah. I love that so much. So much. You know, it's funny. A lot of the you know, people come and say, you know, I'm having these problems in my relationships. I'm experiencing jealousy and anxiety, and we're not coming up with agreements and boundaries and, you know, all the things. And 90% of the time, it all comes back to, okay, how are you caring for yourself? How's your relationship with yourself? How much do you value yourself?
Right. You know?
it always comes back to that.
And it sounds easy. Are you taking care of you? Sounds easy, but it's kind of like you need to communicate with your partner. That sentence sounds so easy, but until you have skill sets and you get a chance to practice and build your muscles around these topics, the sentence sounds easy, almost flippant. But how do you do it? Give me examples, give me stories, give me applications so that we can practice as a triad, so we can practice as individuals, so we can practice as a relationship anarchy web of doom. I don't know, however you identify. Like, I see some of these maps and I'm like, wow, like that's a lot. Awesome. I've been in some of those maps and I'm like, wow, that's a lot.
That was a lot of work.
That's a lot of mapping. But what do these practices look like, and do we get a chance to practice them? I'm part of the kink community. I've been part of those communities for a while, and there's a concept in the rope bondage community specifically of doing labs, and a lab is where it's not the class where you learned a tool, right? Yeah. And it's not a scene where you're either in the bedroom or a play space or whatever and getting your freak on. It's this thing in between where everybody who's going to be involved in an interaction gets together and does lab, like science class. It's, okay, we learned the thing. Let's make sure I actually remember how to do the thing. And you, as my partner who's being bound, I want you to communicate with me. This isn't a thing where I want you to be drifting off into la-la sexy land. I want you to tell me, hey, that feels really good. Or tells me, ooh, that's pinching this nerve here. Can we try moving that rope up? And I think if we could somehow lab our relationship skills, and say, hey, we're not in a time of crisis. I'm not using this, like, you know, equation for communication within relationship. I'm not using it in the middle of a crisis moment. And it's not when I read it in a book. What's it like to practice it when there's low stakes?
Yeah, with real feedback.
With real feedback that isn't judgment, that's an opportunity to build our muscles.
Yeah.
And I think that would be so, I mean, I think there would be a richness that could come out of that. But we're told, A, we're actually often told, we're actually not told skill sets. But it's often the, you write it in a book, use it in crisis. And maybe
try
even
and remember
practice...
that tool.
Yeah, let's see if I remember that from 6 books ago that I listened to as an audiobook while driving down the freeway. Yeah, that's going to work out well. Yeah. And it might. Actually, there's some of you who are listening that might work out great. Yeah. But does it work for your partner? Will your other three partners actually agree in that moment when you're having friction between metamors? And you're stuck as the V in the middle or the hub of the spokes. Like, is that going to be the time that you'll remember? The time that it's going to allow space for everyone to thrive afterwards?
Yeah.
Rather than feeling bruised as you struggle through it. I've actually sometimes practiced, if I can't with a relationship, I'll practice with friends where I'm like, so I read this thing that you shouldn't have heated conversations unless you check that someone's available for a heated conversation. So I have a curiosity right now, Mitch, one of my best friends. Mitch, are you available right now for a conversation? He's like, I am available for a conversation. I'm like, great. The conversation is going to be about how the party is going to go next weekend. And I'm nervous that if I bring it up, there might be weirdness at the party. And he's like, cool. Thank you for letting me know your concern in advance so we could keep that in mind. Like, it was so cheesy, but it was a chance to practice this totally low stakes thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it was about what food are we going to have at the party? Because as the vegetarian that attends at a meat eater party, like, but it was low stakes, literally. Haha. Anyway, didn't mean to do that. But but there's that moment where it's just like, because literally if he'd said, no, I'm not taking care of any of your needs whatsoever, I'd be like, great, I'm going to stop at Sprouts grocery store on the way to the party and get myself some vegetarian and vegan treats for me and two other people. Probably such a low stakes conversation, but I got to practice this concept of a conversation tool. And so I think practicing these skills with ourselves, right? Having those challenging conversations with us. Am I available to sit down and do self-journaling? Nope, I had a crappy day at the office. Let's not do that. Go you, self. You just practiced a thing that's going to help you level up in your relationships because you actually listen to you. And so me, I think there's this notion of practice that helps all of us.
Yeah. Yeah. Everything feels awkward the first couple of times you do it.
Surreal.
I mean, literally everything.
I'm getting ready to teach a class called Sexy Safer Sex for a group of 18 to 26 year olds at the local LGBTQ center. And oh, it's so good. And specifically making all kinds of safer sex practices sexy, whether it's the conversation about when you last got tested to like what shape of condom fits you best. Because no, there's not just one shape. All that kind of stuff. And one of the things that I am going to be saying so often is it's going to be awkward. Practice on a cucumber three times before you ever get there. Yes. Try masturbating wearing a condom before you ever get together with a partner.
Well, that's what I tell every swinger.
Is it?
That's what I tell every swinger. Every swinger with a penis who's like, I'm worried that it's not going to work when I get into a scene. And I'm like, you're right. It's not going to unless you practice.
Yeah. Seriously. Scotty Thompson, who's another sexuality educator, worked for Planned Parenthood for years. He actually has people do who are in partnership that are going to be using condoms if they're looking for something fun and spicy. To do like group masturbation while wearing their condoms, especially if it's like MMM kind of relationships or multiple people who have penises. Like, what's it like for group masturbation and then trying on different condoms mid-sex, like where it's like, oh, one brand isn't working for you very well. Try on Trojan Ultra Thins. Trojan Ultra Thins smell weird to you. Try PS condoms. You know what I mean? Like try many things while you're in a group masturbation setting. So it's not just you alone in your bed. And I'm like, okay, that just sounds like a hot scene. Can I just be there as your camera person? Like
combined with practice.
combined with practice.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. So fun.
That's exactly it.
Oh, I love it. I love it so much. You know, I am often telling clients who want something to change in their relationship or their relationships. I would say a lot of people come to me and I say, you know, what is it that you want? What are you looking for? And they'll go, well, if only my partner would do this, or only if they would want to do that, or only if they would change in this way, or they would show up in this way. And I'm like, okay, well, I can't do anything about that. Right. I can't change them. So I'm always describing that every relationship is a system. And anytime you change one thing in a system, the rest of the system has to change. It can't stay the same. Mm-hmm. Right. And so whatever changes you're making with yourself, whatever practices you're putting into place for yourself, however you're loving yourself more, upholding your own boundaries more, valuing yourself more, that's going to impact all of your relationships because those systems have to change. And I see like your book here, everything we're talking about. I'm like, that's exactly it. That's what people need. You don't need your partner to change. You need to change what you have control over. And then they just will.
Though we don't know how they will.
No.
We do not have control over that.
Yep.
And so there can be a nervousness for some of us that if I take care of me and level up my self-connection with me, mm-hmm. how's my partner going to respond? Are they going to also go, oh, shit, I need to work on me too. And now both of us have evolved. And do we still meet each other where we're at?
Yeah.
I actually, in the book, talk about new relationship energy. But I don't mention poly. change that. I mention it in this list, like I have this giant list of things to keep in mind about your self-identity, everything from like race to incarceration history to relationship structures. So I do mention poly, but with NRE, one of the things I look at is if I've spent time leveling myself up or doing self-care, whatever it is, and my partner has done the same, this is a chance for new relationship energy all over again.
Yes.
If we've been, both of us spending, or the three of us spending the last year all doing some really serious deep work, is this a chance for the three of us to go to a tantra retreat in Tulum, Mexico, or to spend a single night based on our realities with money or with kids or whatever? Is this a chance for us all to fall in love again?
Mm.
Is this a chance for me to go, wow, who is this beautiful being before me? And how do the two of us want to fall in love with them once more? Because I honestly think NRE can happen at different chapters in our relationships, whether it's with ourselves, whether it's dyads, triads, or polycules. Like, I honestly believe that NRE doesn't have to be a one-time thing. It's any time the word new happens.
Yeah.
Anytime something new happens. And I think having the courage in our multi-partner dynamics or however we are in our world, having the courage to pause and say, what is new? Rather than being scared that if something new happens, we're going to lose what was old.
Mm.
Like the courage to look at what's new and give ourselves space to have that NRE appear multiple times in a relationship. I think it's, there is a possibility for some powerful stuff there, but it is courageous. It is not something that everybody is up to, ready for, or interested in. There's nothing wrong with it if you're not interested in it.
Yeah.
Right. There's nothing wrong with choosing, nope, not interested. Cool. It's the same thing as if, you know, because I have friends of mine that every single time they go to a diner, they always order the Greek omelet. Go you. Like, there is nothing wrong with being delighted by consistency. And there's other opportunities too.
Mm. So good.
Right?
So good. Oh. I'm curious about on this journey of your self relationship, mm-hmm. what kind of challenges came up? Like what gets in the way of that?
Ooh. I mentioned the existential crisis of, do I like me?
Yeah.
Which was, that ring sat on my desk for almost a year.
Mm.
Like it was just sitting there in a little box. I'd say some of them are the myth that I didn't have enough time for me, that I was telling that story, which I ended up realizing later that I developed this concept called micro dates, where if no one else was around on the bus, I would just like, or put in my earbuds and blast really loud music because no one knew but me. Or sitting there next to someone else and having my own experience. Because when you're with somebody else, like, you're still having your own experience. But the myth that I didn't have enough time for me, it was about prioritization or what I consider me. I'd say I had a lot of story, and I still do have a lot of story that I don't deserve my own stuff, or my own, that nobody else needs to value my own needs. Other people should come first. And that's a lot of trauma story talking.
Yeah.
And a lot of us carry around trauma, and it's embedded in our bodies.
Yeah.
And a lot of that has involved being really gentle with myself when those stories come up And having also allies, so friends or therapists or whoever that I have given active permission, not just it's a friend who calls you out on your shit, it's a turning to your friend and saying, I would like you to call me out on my shit. Yeah. There's a the yeah. difference between the two is called consent. Having a friend who's like, I'm just trying, right? I'm just trying to help you. You need people to call you out on your shit. I'm like, dear friend, I never asked for that.
Yeah.
Right? That's not consensual, friend. I'd say those are three of my biggest ones.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
The story that I didn't have enough space for me. The idea that I don't deserve, and do I like me? I think those are the big ones.
Mm-hmm. 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 Yeah. I think that is so, so, so relatable. So relatable for probably everyone, really.
For well, me. And I don't know.
Most people.
For you, yeah.
Well, I don't know if you talk to.
Fair. But I don't know if you've had this happen, but those moments when we talk about, like, do I like me? To also pause and go, like, do I like everybody in my life every day?
Right.
Right. Or is it, like, is it okay to have the days where it's just like, you know, you do you over there. I'm going to do me over here. Let's retry tomorrow.
You know, it's funny. My kids, they love to ask me who I love the most. They love to, they mm-hmm. always, it's this big competition. I'm like, I genuinely love you guys all equally. However, there are days that I like some of you more than others. You can compete on that one.
Oh, that is so real. Uh-huh. Oh my God. Oh yeah.
It changes hour by hour sometimes.
Fair.
Yeah. Little lives.
Well, and I think kids are great examples for some of these models.
Yeah.
And in the chapter where I'm like, get to know yourselves better, I literally start out with the fact that when we're kids, if somebody says, what's your favorite color this week? And you're just like, what's your favorite color? And you say, my favorite color is teal. And then 2 weeks later, a different teacher says, what's your favorite color? And you go, my favorite color is brown. Those are two of my favorite colors. But like, if it's 2 weeks apart and you have different answers, when you're in kindergarten, no one gives you shit.
Yeah.
No one cares. But as an adult, when's the last time you got to reassess your favorite color without somebody asking you about it?
I'll tell you, that's a really funny example because everyone assumes my favorite color is purple because I have purple hair and my house is purple and my boots are purple. It's not.
Right. I think that's a great example. Would you be open to sharing this secret of your heart?
It's actually
aqua. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
I love that. Mine's the mint green to teal spectrum as well.
Yeah.
So that is my default favorite color.
I just don't want to burn it out, right?
Well, that is a great example of the nuance of how your brain and heart experience the world.
Mm.
And so, like this, for me, asking ourselves these questions as if we were back to being in kindergarten and there's nothing wrong with changing our minds. Might sound obvious for some folks, but for a lot of us, I mean, there's a lot of things that I've held on to. And I've literally, after doing some of these questions, when I did some of them for myself, I'm like, oh, I don't need to physically, I am a collector of many objects, especially sacred doodads. And I realized that some of the physical things I'm holding on to were of a story that weren't of me anymore. They were a story that was painted either by me or by someone else 20 plus years ago.
Yeah.
And that I was simply still doing it because I hadn't asked myself in 20 years.
Yeah.
Do you like this one thing?
Yeah.
Is your favorite restaurant still this one place? Is your comfort object, if you're feeling really depressed, still that one teddy bear? Or is that a story you told yourself when you were 15 and you haven't re-asked you? And
or does that change your identity?
Right. For some of us, does it even change? Does it change your identity if right now you went, actually, my favorite color is purple? Like, would you have to reassess things?
Right.
Or is it just like, no, now it's purple, but I'm going to keep all of the aqua stuff because that lights me up. It's just things shift.
Yeah.
And I see that happen. Again, if we're practicing skills that then apply other places, my boy and I, my partner and I, we use the terms daddy and boy in a kink dynamic. But my partner and I, we like our default when we first got together was doing stuff three nights a week. Right. That's when we were like, I would stay at their house usually because they have dogs. I don't. And so dog sitting costs money. It's easier to go there. Yeah. But that's what we were doing. And then we fell into this habit where it became 4 to 5 nights a week just because of what we were doing and what was happening in our world and all this stuff. And then we paused and went, because we were talking about maybe me moving into the house. And we were like, well, how would that work? And they paused and said, I think I would need 3 nights a week not together, even if we're in the same house. And I'm like, have we gotten to be too much together? And they looked at me and they were scared. Oh. Like they had that concern face. I don't know if they're scared, but they had that concern face on. And they said, I think maybe. And I'm like, I think it's a little for me too. Can we go back to 3 a week and then 4 sometimes? And it was like this, their shoulders just dropped. And mine did too. But this slow shift over time in one direction, we hadn't stopped to ask, is this still what we want? Because it had slowly shifted, just like it had slowly shifted from aqua to purple or whatever it might be.
Yeah.
And as compared to pausing and being like, actually, do we need to go back to what it was? Or do we need to go into the next chapter of what it gets to be?
Yeah.
And having the opportunity to practice that question with ourselves, I think for me, having been doing the work of building this book for multiple years, but especially in the past year, doing that work with myself over and over and over again, made it less scary when I asked them this question.
Mm.
It made it less scary for me.
Yeah.
Because I think if I had been the one asking that question 5 years ago, I would have been scared that they would have thought I was rejecting them.
Mm-hmm.
Or that I was saying that I didn't love them as much. When really, what they were having the courage to say was, I think when we're together, I need to have this. And then I was taking that information and whatever the answer would have been, getting to say, I love you and whatever the answer is, we'll make it work. We will find a way to thrive in whatever the structure is, even if it's imperfect or even if this chapter ends up being really short. Right? We try for 2 nights a week and then we, 2 months later are like, this is dumb.
Right?
Like, this is just dumb.
You get to change your mind.
Yeah, well said. Yeah, we get to change our mind. Mm. And how beautiful is that? Yeah. Especially if we listen to everybody in the system of our relationships. We listen to our kids. We listen to our partners. We listen to our close friends. We listen to family of heart or of blood. Like, what would it be like if we practiced these things, listened to ourselves and each other, and then built some stuff that actually was vaguely compatible with all of our lives rather than settling on only one person's story?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Magic. There's this infinite possibilities. Like, it could be anything. Yeah.
Yeah.
Excuse me. Is there anything that I haven't asked you that you would like to share?
Let's see. I love quesadillas.
Me too.
I'm thinking of like random factoids. I collect tarot decks. I'm at about 120 tarot and oracle decks right now, not counting ones.
That's amazing.
Not counting ones that I've sold or gotten rid of or whatever. I don't know. I think my big thing on this topic specifically is that it's really great to build our tools around self-love and our tools around love with others. But what's it like to practice our tools around self-relationing, around self-relationship? And if you're somebody who's been listening to this stuff on this show for an extended period of time, what would it be like to go back and listen to an episode and pretend you were your own partner? What would it be like to think of yourself as one of the people in your own polycule? And I think that's one of the things I've been really working on the last couple of years, including this book, is treating me like a partner that deserves as much love and respect as my other partners in my world.
Oh, good. Fuck, that's powerful. Your book is Become Your Own Beloved, A Guide to Delighting in Self-Connection. I love the name. Before this conversation, I wasn't sure what I would think, but now it has just moved to like the very top of my to-read list because I'm very excited about this.
Well, and as a note for the poly nerds out there, my intro is by Dossie Easton, who was one of the two authors for Ethical Slut. So she's been in retirement for a couple of years, but when I approached her about doing this project, it was really nice because she got to talk about some of her explorations around self-love and self-relationship back in the 60s.
Oh, gosh.
Right? During her time of free love and before the, you know, bringing the word polyamory into popularity. And so to have, you know, having the parent of the poly movement in many ways do this was such an honor. Such an honor. So for folks who are poly book nerds, like, you get to have a slice of Dossie's life from a personal perspective rather than just the academic thoughts perspective.
I love that so much. That was the Ethical Slut was the very first book I read that was like, because I was married monogamously for 13 years. And when I got divorced, I was like, well, I don't want to do that again. I've checked all the boxes that come with marriage that I need to check. Don't want to do that again. I don't want to spend another 13 years with the one and then do it again in my 50s. So I was like, so I'm just going to be a big slut and I'll be honest about it because that seems like the right thing to do. I didn't know anybody who was non-monogamous, not a single person. And so I read The Ethical Slut and I was like, oh, I'm not the only one. Right. There's more to this.
Right. And there's lots of amazing resources out nowadays that were not available back in the 90s and aughts when that project first came out. But I think, A, the new version is such a rich, like the one that came out, like, what is it, 7 years ago, is a really rich update from the original. If you're somebody who's been polyamorous, who's listening and read it back in the 90s or aughts, like, reread the third version, the purple cover book. But I think honoring some of the original, like these earlier concepts with whatever you're listening to nowadays is really important too, to get some of the base framework for these conversations is really useful.
Absolutely. Absolutely. 100%. You're amazing. And I could probably talk to you all day long. This is so fun.
I have been super enjoying myself and I love the work that you're doing. Like, it's just juicy. It is so juicy. And yeah, I'm looking forward to just getting to check out more of your stuff and dive in deeper because I love it when nerds meet nerds.
Yes.
I refer to them sometimes as that sometimes when people like us end up meeting each other, you end up with brain babies, right? Conversation pieces come out of it that would never have happened otherwise. Absolutely. And people later are like, where the hell did that thought come from? And I'm like, it's because I hung out with them. So yeah, I love this. Love to be back on sometime 6 months to a year from now, I would love to come back.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Where can people find you?
My website, as well as most of my social media, is passionandsoul.com, including my Patreon, patreon.com/passionandsoul, where every single week I put out different resources. I have different Patreon only classes, including I have a recorded version of my intro to polyamory class that is up there for patrons. So feel free to check that out. And then, social media is all over the place. I'm findable. If you type in Lee Harrington on the internet, you find me, an actress, or a woman who wrote Rex in the City, a complete dog walking guide, who is an amazing kirtan performer. Please support her work. Her new album is great. She's not me.
That's amazing.
She's not me. Oh. I say this simply because she has gotten my email before. And because occasionally they like different places will write me, be like, did you write a book on dog walking? And I'm like, no, that's that Lee. Anyway,
different king.
But yeah, so passion and soul. Well, cause to me, I mean, passion and soul are two of the really important things in my life, right? Yeah. Do we have passion for ourselves and for others in the world? You know, that is how that's how I find some of my North Star.
Oh, it's beautiful. I have one more question for you. And this one
will
not air on the podcast. This goes on my Patreon, patreon.com/notmonogamous. And it is just the tip. And it is, the question is, what is your favorite or best sex tip? Amazing. You're fantastic and brilliant.
This is so good. I am so excited. Like, yeah. And there's such juiciness in all of this. And I'm 30 years into doing consensual non-monogamy in some way. And though in middle school, we referred to it as being in a love dodecahedron because we were all on math team. And we didn't have a good word for it. But I was into Will. Will was into Amanda, but Amanda got pregnant by Mike, who was really into Anisha. But Anisha was kind of into Derek and Skyla. And Anisha was also kind of into me, and I was into Thomas. Like, it was a whole thing.
Yeah.
Right? It was a thing. But, like, 30 years in, I'm still learning shit.
Yeah.
Still getting ideas. Finding systems that I would have never conceived of. Because all y'all dreaming up new ideas are awesome. Right. And we all get to keep inspiring each other. So, like, let's just keep doing it. Let's keep inspiring each other.
I love that. That's perfect. Wonderful. Thank you so, so, so much.
Yay.
If you are one of our Patreon supporters, if not, go to patreon.com/notmonogamous. But if you are, then you just heard the entire episode ad-free with the bonus content, just the tip, and got to hear Lee and I dish on some sexy tips and advice and ideas. And if you are one of my lovers, which is the highest tier of our Patreon, you also get a monthly group call with me. And I've really, really been enjoying those. So go check out the Patreon, get just the tip, get the whole episode ad-free. And share some love. Share some love with me. Share some love with the podcast. And if you have anything you would like to hear us talk about, shoot me an email. Go to alisiapayne.com. All the details are there or in the show notes. Bye. Thank you so much for listening today. It would mean the world to me personally and would help us keep this little podcast going if you would subscribe, leave a review, or share this episode with your friends. For more personalized support with your own relationships, we can work together on a one-to-one basis. Just visit my website at alisiapayne.com and schedule a free call to chat about life, the universe, and your relationships. Bye.